The following is a paid program. The views and opinions of this program are solely those of the host and do not necessarily reflect those of the KFBK staff or management or its parent company, Clear Channel Communications.
This is News Talk 1530 KFBK. It must be Sunday noon because it's the Travel Guys show. Coming up on the Travel Guys,
there's a charge for your carry-on luggage.
How would you like to find out the 1,000 places that you need to see before you dive? Got that coming up.
Road reporter Clayton Whitehead checks in from Madrid, Spain.
And a giant rabbit jumping in or out of a suitcase. I'm not sure. We're going to talk about the big build out at the International Airport with a spokesperson coming up shortly as well.
All that and more next on the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. I'm a traveling man, king of the road.
Hit the road, Jack.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Get your kicks out on the Route 66. Let it roll.
Let it roll. We're on the road again, and it is the Travel Guys. I'm Tom Romano along with Mark Hoffman. Mark, how come you're on the phone? Are you? I thought you. I keep
you're
looking.
You're such a bright guy. You picked right up on that.
I keep looking around for you, and I don't see you because you're on the phone. Where are you?
I am in Bend, Oregon, as we speak, at the Oregon State Tourism Conference.
Boy, later on we're going to talk to Clayton, and he's kind of like on a conference too, but he's in Spain.
Exactly. Well, it's been a busy week.
Now I understand you didn't like fly directly to Oregon, so...
No. Spent 4 days traveling through Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and Wyoming.
Kind of a long ways out of the way.
1,200 miles, Tom, tracing the route of old historic Lincoln Highway, and we'll be talking more about that on future shows.
But okay.
It was a great adventure.
All right. Well, with that in mind, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But you're there, I'm here, and of course, the very first thing we always do at the Travel Guys show is get everybody up to date on the travel news. So there is your travel news theme. Mark, what's the latest in the world of travel?
Southwest Airlines announced they had carried more passengers in 2009 than any other U.S. airline for the third consecutive year. American Airlines carried more international passengers to and from the United States than any other U.S. or foreign carrier for the 20th consecutive year. Dallas-based Southwest led the domestic category with 101 million passengers, followed by American Airlines with 85 million and Delta Airlines with 67. Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport held on to its title of the world's busiest airport. Chicago's O'Hare came in second, and Los Angeles ranked third in a list of the top 10 largest airports. In a sure sign of an improving economy, Norwegian Cruise Lines raised prices last week. Cruise fares went up on more than 125,000 rates across the fleet on every ship and every sail date through 2012.
Now, the prices are still lower than what they used to be a few years ago, right?
They are, but the cruise lines have seen a real upsurge in bookings during the first quarter, and as somebody who's in the travel business, I can tell you that there are definitely signs that this year looks better than last.
Okay.
Carnival Cruise Lines is adding a new dining option called the Chef's Table, which lets passengers tour the galley and dine with a ship's chef. The culinary experience includes a multi-course dinner hosted by one of the line's master chefs, along with a private cocktail reception and a tour of the galley. Depending on the vessel, the meal takes place in non-traditional dining venues throughout the ship, such as in the library or conference center. Kind of sounds like a Clue game.
Well, I'll tell you, I would love to do that because I love to cook, and I'm not great at it, but I'm always looking for new ideas. The chef would be probably annoyed with all the questions that I'd be asking about how do you fix that.
It does sound like fun. The program can be booked on board through the ship's guest information desk. Carnival rolled it out on a couple of ships last year and is expanding it fleet-wide later on this season. The cost is $75 per person. The New York Times reports that United Airlines and U.S. Airways are in merger talks again. If successful, it would create one of the world's largest air carriers. Both companies' shares rose on the news. One analyst said it might be an attempt by United to signal Continental Airlines that if they are not interested in a merger, United is looking for a new partner. United and Continental had preliminary merger discussions in 2008. Delta and Northwest Airlines merged last year. Previously, America West and U.S. Airways joined together in 2005. Both United and U.S. Air are members of the Star Alliance. Starting
now,
today, yes, sir?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, you've been around, been doing this for a while. Historically, are mergers of airlines beneficial to the consumer or not?
No. No, less competition is never good news for the consumer. So I don't think I don't think this is headed in a positive direction. But I'm going to guess that at some point, Congress is probably not going to be real gung ho about airline mergers as the numbers of major carriers start to dwindle.
Okay.
Starting today, those flying from the U.S. to Canada can take two carry-on bags and personal items with them on the plane. Restrictions on carry-ons were imposed after the botched Christmas Day terror attack on a flight from Detroit from Amsterdam. Canada quickly banned carry-on luggage because of the long security lines that were created by the inspections, then allowed U.S.-bound passengers one carry-on bag and some personal items in January. And finally, the big news of the week, Spirit Airlines has become the first airline to charge for carry-on luggage. The charges announced last week will range from $20 to $45 for any bag that cannot fit under your seat. To get the lower fee, you have to join Spirit's $9 fare club for, coincidentally, $9. Spirit claims the new charges are not a revenue enhancer, but an effort to have their planes spend less time on the ground and more time flying. Because the carry-on fees are higher than Spirit's check bag fees, the airlines say what they really want is to eliminate delays caused by checking last-minute bags when the bins are full. Spirit says they have noticed an increase in carry-on bags in the past year. You think? Maybe people started carrying more bags on board when they had to pay $50 a bag round trip for them?
Yeah.
Will other carriers follow? It's possible, say some airline analysts. And you know, Tom, it's I can't help but think of Southwest Airlines. They don't have any trouble turning their planes around in 25 minutes or so. They're faster than any of their competitors. They don't charge for checked luggage. There's none of this carry-on nonsense. They've got this incredibly logical, smooth, painless way to board an airplane that I'm shocked no one else has copied yet. It's amazing. Spirit Airlines, by the way, does not serve Sacramento, so most local travelers will not be immediately impacted by this obscene charge.
It's a guy named Dick Orkin, who is one of the world's most creative copywriters and commercial designers. He designed an ad one time for a company that teaches people how to pack and so forth. And the commercial dealt with this guy getting on an airlines, and he's sitting down in his chair, and he's just like stuffed. He looks like he's wearing one of those fat suits. But what? And the person next to him says, What is it that you're wearing there? He says, well, I have on my warm-up outfit, and underneath that I have my suit, and underneath that I have my jogging outfit, and then I have my pajamas on underneath that. And if you noticed in my coat pocket, I have my toothbrush, and over here in this other pocket I have my shaver. And, you know, so to save money and to save time and to not have to pack, he just wore everything. And I honestly believe the way we're headed pretty soon, everybody that's going to be getting on the planes probably are going to be maybe wearing about 90% of what they're taking.
Well, or maybe they'll just have an area where you put on like one of those orange prison jumpsuits, and then you just go through security that way.
There you go.
We know that you're clean.
Well, it's the travel news here with the travel guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Coming up, let's see, what do we have? Patricia Schultz, I just changed her sex. Patricia Schultz is coming up with 1,000 places to visit before you die.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. Life I love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again.
This This is the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. And Mark, you rounded us up a special guest for today's program. Somebody I understand that you met when you were back in New York. Is that correct?
I listened to Patricia in New York City. She is the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. It's almost a bucket list sort of thing, but it would be an awfully long bucket list. Good afternoon, Patricia.
Hi, good afternoon. It is a long bucket list.
This book is about, in case you're not seeing it here in Radioland, is about 2 inches thick, and it goes all over the planet. I mean, it covers everything from right here in our own backyard. I was marveling at, as I went through the Eastern European portion of it, and you had the town square in Prague, where they have the most wonderful Christmas market. And 1 year I found myself there, and snowflakes were falling, and I was drinking a cup of hot mulled wine. And when I started reading your book, it was like that's the great thing about travel, of course, is that it creates memories. It also creates fantasies. This must have been a tremendous amount of fun to put together.
I thought you were going to say it was a tremendous amount of work, and it was, but you're right. It took me 8 years to write it, and every day I got out of bed with a smile on my face because I was either off to an airport, and when does that not make you smile, or else I was home trying to commit it to paper, and like you said, reliving all of these memories, which are so special, and it just enriches your life in such a way. I can't say enough great things about travel.
What inspires someone to put together a book like this, Patricia?
I think mostly because I had been writing for guidebooks for Frommer's, American Express, et cetera, and I had become my friend's kind of token go-to person. And for decades, they were calling me or emailing saying, you know, I'm going here, what should I see? Or I don't know where I want to go in Southeast Asia, what do you suggest? So I realized that I had such a wealth and such a volume of personal experience, and I was always so ready and happy, elated to share it with my friends. And then I was getting the, you know, you don't know me, but I know your next door neighbor's brother kind of thing, you know, or my sister's daughter is going on a honeymoon, can you help? That I decided to kind of put it all between two covers, innocently enough, and it kind of morphed into this massive best places around the world kind of project.
Mark, I know before we started the interview, I asked you how many of these places that you've been to, and what would be the answer?
Well, you know, I some rainy Thursday afternoon, I'm going to have to sit down with a pencil and kind of check them all off. And there is a checkoff list in the back of the book. But my gut feeling is probably 80%, 85, 82.7. It's some people can't imagine that I haven't been to all of them, and other people are amazed that I've been to more than a few hundred. So 80, I think, is the right number. 80%.
Patricia Schultz is our guest this afternoon. Patricia is the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. And Patricia, isn't that kind of part of travel, is that you should always have a list of favorite places you've been and you want to go back to that you can share with other people, and a list of places that you still want to get to?
Oh, well, hopefully. I can't imagine not having those many, many, many places down the road that have not yet been seen or explored or experienced. I hope to never say, oh, I've seen it all, I think I'll go to the country club this weekend. You always need to understand that the world is massive and the possibilities are just countless. And I think that's what keeps us excited about travel. We'll never, ever see it all.
You've got everything in here from places like the Sistine Chapel. For example, here's in Italy, we have the Sistine Chapel, and then we have Venice, which is an entire destination. She's got several pages. I looked at the California section with some interest because you have a number of California items. Some of my favorites, Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego, an absolute favorite for hotel or history buffs alike. You've got the wine country. And then you've got I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but you've got a most interesting restaurant in Berkeley, California.
Chez Panisse,
yes. Yes.
Do you know it?
I do not, and it's the only restaurant that you've listed here in California. So tell us about it.
I gasp because Alice Walters is such an icon in the food world. But this is brilliant because it means that I, an East Coaster, can open your eyes to something that is virtually in your backyard that you may not have been aware of. And this is a wonderful thing. And while I gasp, I'm also so happy to know that this book continues to do that very kind of thing, to make you aware and to open your eyes about things that are just an hour or two down the road, as well as the back alleyways of Venice, as you mentioned, or the splendor of the Sistine Chapel. So it is that kind of book. It's all of these little hidden things in the U.S. and the very well-known things on the other side of the planet, and then everything in between.
So if you had to pick something out of the book, Pauline, a place that you haven't been, what's on your at the top of your list right now?
Well, of that 20% where I have not yet gone, there are entire areas in India which I have not yet seen, and I so love India. Antarctica, it's a hard trip. It's not a rigorous trip. They make it quite easy for you, but it's, you know, a lot of time to get there and to spend substantial time there, and it's expensive, but I hear it's nothing less than magical. So many of the islands in the South Pacific, as West Coasters, you have a tendency to travel far more frequently into the Pacific than as East Coasters we do. And so much in South America. I don't know North Brazil very well, which is so different from Rio de Janeiro and São Paulo in the South. And Chile, I'm sorry to say that before all of this horrific devastation, I have never visited, but it's on my list.
And to take you and to go to the other side of the places that you have visited, let's say, for example, right here in the old U.S. of A., if I said, Patricia, you could go to any place that you wish and spend an evening, where would you go?
I would love to go to the opera festival that starts soon in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I just adore the area of the Four Corners, and it's a great city. It's like the cultural capital of that area of the Southwest. Maine, the coast of Maine in the summertime is just incredible. It's beautiful, beautiful, with a great national park. And I would love to do that whole transcontinental drive that I did many decades ago when, you know, the top was down and the world was mine, and I first understood the breadth and the diversity that we have here in the U.S. Maybe follow Route 66.
A lady after my own heart, yes. Well, that's, Patricia, that's kind of my, in fact, I'm headed out on the Lincoln Highway.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so.
We have such great road trips. There's a great website called byways.org. And if you're going to, you know, Vermont or Idaho, a beautiful state, Colorado, Oklahoma, and you want to know what the most scenic drives are, you just click on the state, and up on your screen comes all of these various color-coded scenic byways in order of preference and in order of historic beauty or natural beauty, et cetera.
You know, this would be a great just coffee table book just to have out when people come over to visit, because it has little snapshots of all of these great places to stay. And the way it's laid out, Patricia, you know, people will see places they recognize, things they've heard about, places they've been, places that are close to those that they know, that they can connect to. And not only do you have it in set up and so that it's certain areas, but certain events that occur there, like, and if you go to Oregon, you've got like the Oregon Shakespeare
festival
and so forth. So, you know, it's very, very nicely laid out. Very cool. By the way, for the listeners, you can go to sportsleisure.com and connect to this book as well.
Patricia, there's an updated version here that you wanted to tell us about. The original copy was published in 2003, but this is particularly important because of the...
I was just going to say that a lot of the information had come from much prior to 2003 because it took me 8 years to write this book. So we've just, it was way overdue, but what can I say? We've just published this month. It's out on every shelf imaginable in the U.S. from, you know, all of the chain stores and on Amazon.com. The updated version, which has all of the new prices and websites and telephone numbers for each of these 1,000 places. Because what a shame to convince you that, you know, you have to go to Vancouver Island and this is the farm B&B to stay at, and then not give you information about how to go there. So all of that information has been updated, and then next year, what I'm working on now and will come out next year is a completely redone revision with a whole ton of new stuff. But don't wait until next year. You know, carpe diem, it's just, you know, our time is too precious. And when we think that our lives are fragile, then also consider some of these places, you know, one tsunami, one earthquake, one mudslide, and it's kind of wiped off the map. So carpe diem really is my mantra.
Patricia Schultz is our guest this afternoon. The title of the book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Patricia, it has truly been a pleasure.
Okay.
And we're going to have to talk again sometime because I can see just when you slipped in Vancouver Island there, you hit another Tofino on.
There's so much.
Oh, it's such a – what a wonderful planet and what a wonderful world we live in. And thank you for sharing some of it with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Enjoy the day.
And this is the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Keep it here for more of everything you need to know before you go.
On the road again.
You're listening to the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. And by the tone of the music, we must be on the road to someplace exotic. I'm hooking up right now, ladies and gentlemen, all the way to Madrid, Spain. You can hear the crackly phone in the background. That must mean that we're on the line with the tour guy, Clayton Whitehead from Sports Leisure Vacation. Hello, Clayton.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
We're doing fine here, Clayton. Now, why don't you give me a long-distance update on your trip?
Absolutely, Tom. Well, first of all, I'm about 7,000 miles from home, I think. I left yesterday morning for Madrid, Spain, and... oh, gosh, 20 hours later, I think, I got here after connections in Denver and Newark. I have to tell you, I've never been to Madrid before. This is an absolutely phenomenal city, a world-class European capital. Never been here before, didn't know what to expect, but it's definitely taken me by surprise.
What was the first thing that caught your eye when you got into town, Clayton?
Well, I think the fact that it doesn't seem Spanish, but European. The architecture here, the design of the boulevards, the wide avenues, the whole city plan and all the architecture definitely speaks of a European tradition from the 18th and 19th and early 20th centuries. Definitely this town looks more French and Italian than it does Spanish, but it is a beautiful, beautiful city, well-maintained, clean. And getting here on the weekend, the streets are just full of people who have come in from all around to shop and have tapas. It's just the electricity here is incredible.
Now, you're in Madrid, Spain, but you're not there with a tour group. Tell me what takes you to Spain this trip.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been a very active member of the National Tour Association for over 20 years. NTA is the major association for tour operators on the North American continent, be it Canada, Mexico, or the United States. This is our first ever convention in Europe, and it will convene in a few days in Sevilla, or Seville, as we would call it. But a number of us have flown in early to Madrid. We're going to have a little tour about the country to include Barcelona, Cordoba, and then down into Sevilla.
Now, for those of that plan to travel international, particularly to go that far to arrive in Spain and then gear up to do stuff, what recommendations would you have to them in regards to pacing and so forth?
Well, the flight over the pond is definitely challenging, no matter how old or young you are, no matter what your mobility level is. People need to get a lot of rest. You drink a lot of fluids and not so much alcohol, both before the flight and during the flight. And during the flight, they have a lot of distractions, Tom. They had movies. They had duty-free shopping. They had games. They had TV shows. There was a lot of distractions, but nonetheless, you really need to get a lot of rest so you can hit the ground running. Because once you get to Europe, you know, dollar's at an all-time low, the euro is at an all-time high. So you don't want to waste any time sleeping. You want to be able to hit the ground refreshed and ready to go.
Now, speaking of places to stay and so forth, do you want to actually stay in the most luxurious hotels that you're going to stay for the entire trip, especially if you're, let's say, the first couple of days are going to be mostly to rest? What recommendation do you have there?
Well, certainly if you come into a city center, no matter where, whether it's Paris or London or Madrid, where I am right now, you're going to pay top dollar if you stay downtown. So I might really recommend to our listeners that you may just fly in and stay at an airport hotel for the first night and just rest. Take drugs if you have to. Have a drink of brandy if you have to, whatever you need, but just rest. And then get up the next morning refreshed and ready to go. And then maybe transfer to a city center hotel, which is going to cost a lot more. but that might be your best travel value in this situation.
Did we discuss what you had for dinner tonight?
Oh, Tom, dinner tonight was absolutely extraordinary. I went to a restaurant in the old city center, an area that dates back to the 15th and 16th century. I ate at a restaurant called Posada de la Villa. It was, or Villa, as they would say in Spanish. It was built in 1642. It's been in continuous operation ever since then. We had the most extraordinary meal of tapas, red wine, this lamb entree that was just, well, it was like butter, Tom. It would just melt in your mouth. And then this beautiful selection of desserts, all types of flans and pastry dishes. They eat late here in Spain, I've learned. Our meal didn't start till 9 p.m. It ended at 11 p.m. They eat late. They enjoy the courses. There's a lot of conversation, a lot of laughter, a lot of fun, and most of all, a lot of wine.
Is that traditional dining for all of Spain, that dinner is usually late at 9 o'clock and so forth?
Yes, it pretty much is, not only for Spain, but for Mediterranean countries in general. Dinner tends to be a very, very late meal. Lunch, they have around lunchtime, or what we would know as lunchtime, noon, 1 o'clock. But, of course, they have that wonderful little thing called the siesta in the afternoon. And, see, that changes the whole schedule. Breakfasts tend to be continental, pastries, cheese, meats, fruits, a medium-sized meal, I guess. Lunches tend to be sandwiches, maybe a soup or a stew. Dinners, 2 to 3 hours, many courses. And like I said, lots and lots of wine. But afterwards, hey, you can walk around the city.
You'll need to.
Get off those calories.
Yeah, you'll need to do a little walk around the city. And otherwise, they probably, I don't know, maybe the Mediterraneans, I'm part Italian, but I have a lot of indigestion. I would not survive. I would be up till 3 in the morning. If you're just tuning in, this is the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and I'm talking with the tour guy from Sports League. Your vacation, Clayton Whitehead. Clayton, speaking of getting around the city, what it seems to be, for, particularly for, since we're talking for tourism, what is the main mode of transportation that you would look for?
Well, Europeans are a lot different with their sensibilities than Americans. They tend to walk wherever they go, if it's at all possible. And a walk might be a half a mile, even a mile. But it's a relatively flat city. It's very doable. I also witnessed that they have an excellent system of taxi cabs here, public buses, and also a great metro system, an underground subway that's very efficient. And then for tourists, they have both single-level and double-decker buses with narration available in many languages. I took one of these tours this afternoon and got a little taste of the city, visited the Palacio Real, I think, Palacio, am I saying that right?
I don't know.
Something like that. The Royal Palace, let's say in English. And the big cathedral in town. And all these are very easily accessible for tourists via the public transportation or one of these local tour services.
Clayton, besides a lot of art, is there a lot of entertainment venues?
Madrid, where I am right now, has a very vibrant theater scene on the Gran Via, which the translation of that would be Broadway, and we as Americans all know what Broadway means. They have a number of cinemas, live theaters. In fact, I saw that Chicago, that great American favorite Broadway show, is here presently. A lot of small stages. This is a very culturally alive city. Flamingo dancing, ballet, the opera. In fact, I saw The Merchant of Venice is going to be opening here in a few days. So with the university as well, there's so much to see in terms of live arts and dramatic performances. It's pretty European over here. Of course, all the signs, everything pretty much is in Spanish. However, I think American travelers can be very confident in knowing that English is the world's second language. So it's very easy for Americans to travel over here. The Spaniards are very sympathetic and eager for us to try the few words of Spanish that we know. And when we don't know, we can break into Spanglish and use a few English words. And usually we'll get what we need in the end of the day.
Very good, very good. Now, you're there representing your company, Sports Leisure Vacations. Is there are there plans for the company to be doing some tours to that area?
Absolutely. I'm hoping that in either 2011 or 12, at the latest, we will be doing some tours over here that will include Madrid, Barcelona, and then the beautiful Mediterranean coast of Spain, which is just incredible beyond belief. The history here, the artistic significance of the area, the church, of course, the Catholic Church has had a great significance on this country, the study of the monarchy. There's just so many layers of history and beauty to explore in the great country of Spain. So I do hope to be back with the tour group within 12 to 24 months.
We're talking with Clayton Whitehead from Sports Leisure Vacation in Madrid, Spain. Clayton, I know you've been up for practically a full day.
Yes, it's about 4 a.m. yesterday morning, Tom.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Thank you so much for visiting with us here on the Travel Guys. And you have a safe and wonderful trip, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Awesome, Tom. Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK, and Mark Hoffman and I will be back in just a moment with an interview with Gina from the Sacramento International Airport, an update on the Big Build.
News, weather, and traffic on News Talk 1530 KFBK.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
You're listening to the Travel Guys here on News Talk 1530 KFBK. On our very first show, we talked with a spokesperson out at the Big Build at the airport. And Mark, understand we have a guest today that's going to bring us up to date. What do we got?
Gina Swanky, spokesperson for Sacramento International Airport, is joining us on the phone. Hi, Gina.
Hello.
So tell us, recently out there at the airport, we had really big dig. Lots of traffic shutdowns and reroutings and things like that. And I understand that is over with now.
That is correct. We had a one-week period where we closed the approach roadway to Terminal B, and that was to expedite some of the projects in relation to the Big Build.
And so that roadway is open again now. So give us an update on the Build. When do we expect that beautiful new terminal with the People Mover?
Right now, we are still expecting opening in late 2011.
In late 2011. And do we know yet? Something dawned on me the other day, of course, when the new terminal opened, what is currently the newer terminal, Terminal A, opened a number of years back. It had to be determined who was going to fly out of that terminal. And it strikes me that the airline that has the most lift out of Sacramento is in that Terminal A. Will they be moving to Terminal B, or has that all been decided yet?
That is the plan as of right now.
So Southwest will be in the new terminal?
That is the plan at the moment. Of course, you know, we have a long way to go before the end of 2011, so things can change, but that is the current plan.
Okay. And is there anything else that you can tell us about banded service or anything that is on the drawing board currently?
Well, with the new facility, of course, it has integrated customs facilities. So rather than having a separate building that is considered an interim building, this will have integrated customs that will be a perfect fluid movement. So it'll be very appealing to airlines. So it'll definitely bolster our abilities to attract international carriers.
Yeah, I think it'll also look better for Sacramento. It's kind of embarrassing to have folks, that international terminal out there is kind of a let's face it, it was a commuter terminal at one time. So,
well, it's one that has been great in the interim, but it's something that we've always looked at a more permanent option for our carriers and for our customers. And that is coming with the new terminal. And with that, that gives us some gate flexibility. Right now, of course, that customs facility, the only aircraft that can go in there are aircraft that are going to push those customers through customs. With the new terminal, the gates have the ability to either be a domestic gate or to send people through customs. So it's a great opportunity.
And the new terminal will have how many gates?
New terminal will have 19 gates total. We actually get a gain of 4 gates total overall.
And so for folks who are not familiar, the new terminal is going to have a people mover. So you are going to check in and then get on a people mover and go out. And will you clear security on the terminal side or on the flight side?
On the concourse side. With the people mover, some people are concerned about how that will impact their travels and if it'll be easy and convenient as it always has been. And that was one of our goals, is with the people mover, it's incredibly important to us to not have somebody, you know, walk a marathon, basically, to get to their gate, and especially those people that are mobility impaired, and it is quite a walk. So that people mover will be running. We'll have one stopping in a station about every 60 seconds to carry people out to the concourse conveniently.
Gina, can you compare what the people mover and the terminal is going to be like in any comparisons to any other airports in the country?
Well, the team, of course, looked at many airports, including Atlanta. The people mover experience is similar. Many people from this area have gone to Las Vegas, so they've boarded a people mover that's been an automated people mover.
That was the example I was going to use was Las Vegas, because it's a fairly short haul, whereas Atlanta, you know, people mover goes out to 18 terminals. Whereas here, it's just going to be – it literally is going to add 2 or 3 minutes to the time that you will travel each direction.
The other question I had is, in a number of people have brought this up that have been out to the airport and they're looking at the structure being built, and as you drive by this really, really large structure, the next thing you see as you're headed towards the exit is you see the flight tower. And from the ground, you're going – you know, that building looks like it could be blocking the view of the guy in the flight tower. Now, in your world, who's there and you know, can you clear that up for me?
Yeah, actually, there are no site problems. Initially, when we did have the hotel as part of the project, which that hotel has been eliminated from the project, it was actually designed to make sure that those flight lines were maintained, of course, where the tower needs to see. Are the runways, and they do have a clear shot of those viewable areas.
All right. So those listeners that were waiting for the answer to that question, you can relax. They'll be able to see just fine.
And that applause you hear in the background is from the man who built the Hampton Inn, the Homewood Suites, and the Holiday Inn Express about 4 miles from the airport. The fact that that hotel is not going up is probably worth, I'd say a couple million dollars to him over the course of time.
That's true for the moment. I mean, it's one of those things we definitely feel that an on-airport hotel is important. It just wasn't something that was penciling out as to reach a break-even point in a reasonable amount of time, so it wouldn't have made sense to an operator to have that. That's why that was pulled off the project for the moment.
You know, one of the discussions with the creation of the big build of the new airport was art. There's always a certain amount of funding that goes in for an art structure or art structures, if you will. Refresh my memory. What is going to be the key piece of our artwork at the new terminal?
Are we getting another suitcase sculpture? Or?
Similar. It's actually a large red rabbit jumping into a suitcase. So it has a sense of whimsy to it, and it definitely has a sense of movement. And that will definitely suit the space as for our arrival building. With that, of course, it's a very large space, so it can accommodate a very large piece of sculpture.
A big rabbit.
Well, it seems like we should have a mascot like that, Tom, because, you know, in the airline industry, they refer to Sacramento as known as Smurfville, and the reason is because our abbreviation is SMF.
Right.
And so Smurfville is what all the airline people all over the country call Sacramento. Gina, thank you so much for all the information and stuff and taking a few minutes with us today to update us on the big build, and we'll talk to you again in a couple months.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Gina Swanky from Sacramento International Airport.
Here on the Travel Guys, you're listening to News Talk 1530 KFBK. More to come. Don't go away.
Welcome back to the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. This is Mark Hoffman along with Tom Romano.
I want to tell you, Mark, it's been great having you on the phone, but I'm really looking forward to having you back in the studio in 2 weeks. Look, for those listening, remember now, everything we talk about on the Travel Guys program, you can find out about by going to sportsleisure.com. There you'll be able to see, you know, find out about the books that we talk about. You'll also be able to find out about all the cool stuff that we visit with John Holloway on a regular basis in regards to cool stuff to take on your trips. Let's see, as well as, of course, all the great trips that are available through Sports Leisure Vacation. Mark, I understand in a couple of weeks we're going to be kicking off something pretty exciting. What do we got?
We are. The Travel Guys Mystery Spot Contest will kick off in 2 weeks. Folks will have an opportunity to help discover where the mystery spots are. Grand prize, winner's choice, a week in Hawaii for two, or a trip to New York City to see Broadway shows.
So be here in 2 weeks, and we'll give you all the details on the mystery spot contest. And, of course, information and rules will be posted on the sportsleisure.com website. Well, it's been a great show, Mark. We'll look forward to 2 weeks from now.
Thanks, Tom. A shout-out to all the Sports Leisure travelers that are part of our listening audience today, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
And we'll see everybody next time on the Travel Guys here on News Talk 1530 KFBK.